let me start recording. All right. So I don't know if it was like solar flares or, you know, but I don't know.
That's an interesting place to come in. I don't know if it was solar flares or what.
Well, you know, Adrian was like, hey, the eclipse is coming. Maybe it's solar flares. And I was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that solar flares
are coming.
Okay.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
I will say, jokes aside about my mixpre,
yeah,
it's never sounded anything but stellar.
Well, yes. So, you know, if anybody from Rode or Mackie, which it, well, it's now the same company, Rode bought Mackie. So, you know, if you guys, you feel my pain, guys, and, you know, if you want to send me something,
they're going to go. They're just going to send you some stuff. Okay.
They might, you know, they're good that way. They're good that way.
Have you talked to them? Are they that good that way? I don't know.
I've heard
I
mean, they are with other people, but I don't know.
They are with people they like.
Right. So, you know, if you want to send me a Rodecaster Pro 2 Mini, the little one, the Duo.
Okay.
Great. If you want to send me a Mackie DLZ Mini Creator, you know, the smaller one.
He's not going to say no.
I don't need the big one is what I'm saying. I will get by with the lesser.
What is that? Two inputs? Three inputs?
Yeah, two, I think. Anyway.
Who needs more than two inputs in this world?
That's what I'm saying.
Stereo. Just line the people up in front of a couple mics.
Kids. What?
Hey, speaking of acquisitions, did you see that Canva acquired Affinity?
I saw that this morning. Yeah. They did a video announcement.
How, you know, as an Affinity user, how does that make you feel?
Well, Canva has created, all respect to Canva, they have created a platform that is used and loved by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that is no easy feat in the world of Adobe and, you know, whatever.
Wait, is Canva the thing that Adobe tried to buy?
I think
no,
so.
No, that was Trello? I don't know any of these modern design
things. I don't know. Actually, I'm going to retract that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But Canva is used by a ton of people and used to make great stuff. So
what is it used for exactly? I don't know anything about
it. It's an online, you can use it to make templates. You can use it to make printed material. It's all sorts of things. I mean, it's pretty deep.
That's interesting though, that it is an online tool and they bought a client side software company.
Well, here is what I suspect, and I don't have any details beyond what I've heard or read.
Jeffrey, were in the room? That's amazing. That's right, tell us what right. they said.
What I suspect is they wanted a tool for professionals. You know, Canva is from the way I understand it, is more of a consumer level tool. And, you know, Affinity has positioned itself as more of a professional level tool. So maybe they wanted a professional tool in addition to the consumer tool. I don't know. Maybe they've got deeper pockets and are able to do more development with their resources than Serif's resources. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or it could just be, you know, I think that a lot of times these companies buy each other and do all of this stuff and they don't even know what they're doing half the time. You know, it's like some money people at the top or investor people are like, we need to merge these things because they'd be worth more together than apart, you know, that kind of thing.
They did now.
I don't know why they had a Southern accent. Just yeah, right. Money people.
Was it Colonel Sanders? Is that who bought it?
I say he did.
they said that the talks only started a couple months ago. So this has been a very quick acquisition, relatively speaking.
I used the first versions of all of these things, the Affinity
yep.
stuff.
Yep.
Did the second versions really change that much?
No.
Okay.
There are a few tools that you know have been added and some for the good, some you're kind of scratching your head going, really? That
But it wasn't that's all, the it wasn't a whole tool? New world.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the interface, I think the UI, specifically the toolbar on the left-hand side, the icons there, I think that's a step back. They're really cartoony and they just if you're targeting and marketing yourself as a professional tool, there's a degree of expectation that comes with UI mm-hmm. for a professional tool when you try to put that moniker on it.
Yep.
And it, again, I think that was a step back.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I just noticed it on, you know, I'll put it on the show notes, but I noticed that I don't normally look at the news sites, the, you know, photo news sites, the Petapixels and Foodblogger. I just don't read a lot of that stuff.
It was ironically, or maybe not, it was the first thing in my Instagram feed this morning when I checked it before I came downstairs. That was the first thing that popped up.
Interesting. Okay. Well, maybe that's what it is. Yeah. So what else has been going on this week? I mean, we had some notes for stuff that we stopped talking about last week that you wrote down and I wrote down, which we can continue on unless you have something else you want to discuss.
No. That's good. We talked about getting to the AI thing, and I watched it, and I had to write about it because it, you know, like I said in the piece, it was fascinating, but it was also really kind of disturbing. The level of the depth, I guess, that some of the training has gone on these AI platforms, generative AI platforms. So I don't know if you want to tackle that.
Sure. We can talk about that. Well, a couple of things. Social media, what you put on social media, not necessarily being your best work, which was something we said towards the end.
That's a good one. Oh, okay. I can see. Ooh, wait a minute now. I can see where those two could be related.
All right. Because, give it to me.
Well, if, okay. Let's say that you know that Meta or whoever owns the parent company, you know, all of that stuff. Uh-huh. Let's say that you know that they comply and they are scraping your work.
Okay.
I know that if I put something on Instagram, it's going to be scraped by something. So do I then hold back my best quote unquote work for my own website, for example?
Sure.
Or, you know, you contact me and I'll give you I'll send you a PDF tear sheet. Do people, I mean, you're a photographer. Do people even do tear sheets anymore?
I've been sending out, I spent a lot of last week trying to rustle up some new clients and send out some emails and stuff. And I ended up, instead of attaching I was attaching screenshots. Okay. I want people to go look at my work. If you go to my website, it's a big grid of pictures. Because I figured if I put a picture at a time up there, if the first or second one doesn't grab you, you're gone. You know what I mean? So let me give you a grid of 15 pictures that are all like, oh, wow, all of this stuff is good. Which one looks interesting to me? So what I did was I took a screenshot of the environmental page and the studio page. Mm-hmm. And then I was attaching those as attachments to these emails saying, hey, go look at my work, but I've attached, you know, some quick screenshots if you just want to do a quick hit.
Here's a taste kind of thing. Yeah.
And then I realized, wait a minute. This is like a hot take from 25 years ago. Emails can have image embedded, which I just never, like, as an old school computer person.
Your AOL bill.
You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I do.
Like, because you and I would tend to just attach it.
Yeah. But so, they can be in line now.
It can be in line. So,
as of, you know, 1970.
Exactly. Or, as of probably 2001 or something. So I actually put them embedded in there. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing it that way, just figuring then somebody doesn't have to open it. If you do a PDF, then they got to open it.
Right.
If this way, it's all right there.
Have you thought about doing any sort of printed, like a zine or a postcard or an accordion fold thing?
To ship to people.
Or has that completely gone away in the world of commercial photography?
I haven't done one in a long, long time. I have friends who were, you know, my buddy Randy, who I think listens sometimes, was a master at sending out mailers, sending out emails, he was like a machine sending out stuff. And it worked really well for him for a long time. But I remember having conversations with him when I first met him in 08 or something. Yeah. And he was telling me that, you know, the mailers didn't get anything anymore. So now everyone moved to email, you know, and then he did email for a long time. And then it's like, well, everyone's doing email and everyone's ignoring that. So maybe mailers are the way to go. You know,
you just got
to
keep staying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Off track. I mean, guess.
All of those things, you end up buying the same lists of people from, you know, all those stupid companies that keep track of that stuff. So you spend thousands of dollars on access to a list of creative directors and art directors and whatever it is. But as we all know, what somebody calls themselves a creative director or calls themselves an art director or calls themselves a art producer or an art buyer, like all of those things are not always the same job at every place.
Yeah.
And so you may be spending money. You may spend $2 sending a mailer to, and I know it's $2, but $2 adds up when you're sending.
Yeah. If you send 1,000 of them out. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You may be spending a lot of money sending stuff to people who have nothing to do with hiring people, or they, you know, they may get the stuff and use it, but they don't hire the people. And who knows who hires the people? Maybe it's the main editor person for a magazine. Maybe it's the art director. Maybe it's, you know, this person at this ad firm or whatever. Yeah. I always found it very futile feeling. Yeah. Like there's a big futility factor in all of that. And I personally never got any work that way, but those people tend, there are, you know, examples we've talked about over the years of, oh, this person made this mailer and won awards for their mailer. It's right. Like, did that mean they actually won work? Or, you know what I mean? Like, did they actually get work from it? Or was it just a really clever idea that, you know, I don't know.
I always wish I could have been part of the era of photography where you had to drop off your book.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I just always sent, I'm dropping off my book. I got to go over to this other agency and pick up my book because I got this thing. Oh man, it just always sounded so cool.
I remember I dropped off my book. Oh, what was that woman's name? Is it Jody Kwan at the New York Magazine? I think that's her name. She's like one of those, you know, titans of the industry. You know?
Right.
And I dropped my book off and I picked it up 2 days later and it was like, you know, had been looked at by her or whatever. It's like, okay.
It just always felt so cool.
Well, you also used to just be able to walk in and say, I'd like to see Jeffrey Sidoris. And they'd be like, yes, sir, walk this way. We'll take you to Jeffrey. Right. And now you get to the front desk and they're like, sir, you're not allowed in the lobby of this building. Who are you coming to speak to?
Do you have an appointment?
Is this on the list from 3 years ago from the security system? You know, I mean, it's bad. Right. So anyway, yeah. So yes, to answer your question, no, I don't make PDFs anymore. But like, that's the thing. We're tilting away from the AI thing for a second.
That's all right. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, if someone says, as many of us do, wow, this social media game is really a game, you know, like you either play it the way the algorithm, you want to give me a little, the algorithm.
The algorithm. Nope, it didn't work. Did it work? Nope.
Didn't work.
Did it work? Nope.
You,
did it work? Nope.
You did it yourself. That was really cute.
Oh, wait. Here it is.
Does this work? Yeah. The algorithm.
All right. There you go. Sorry about that. I had the wrong button. Damn it. You had one cue, Sidoris, and you blew it.
You know, if me putting up what I think is really good work gets 100 likes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well,
I mean, 100 likes is that's stellar now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I put up pictures of this family that I did these family portraits of these friend of mine. Actually shot them a few weeks ago, but hadn't gotten around to finishing editing them until this week. And yeah, they've got 392 likes, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah,
that's, you know, pretty great for me. But I was with a 20-year-old yesterday who was telling me that she typically gets 500 likes from her friends, from her 1,000 friends or whatever, you know, because it all depends on who's.
Wow.
Because it's all other college kids going, oh my God, you slay. You know, you're amazing. You're beautiful.
You do what?
I'm sorry. Slay. They just
you
say
slay.
Yeah. S-L-A.
Like you slay me? Like you slay.
Yeah. You never heard that?
Not since the 40s.
Yeah, no. It's
coming
thing.
Back.
Yeah, slay. Huh. Oh my God. I'm sure whoever these people are like rolling their eyes at even the idea of me saying that. But anyway, you get my point is that, yeah, I can have a bunch of people look at it, but that's, you know, a bunch of people on social media. That's not going to get me work, right? So if I want to build a huge thing on social media, well, then I got to do videos where I'm, you know, walking down the street with my camera and fake drop it. And then like it falls through the sidewalk. And then I'm underneath the thing, pulling it out, and then I take a picture, and it's like, hire Bill Wadman.
Wait,
like,
a minute. This is good creative. Hold on, you know what I'm saying? Falls though? To the ground.
Yeah. You get my point though, right? Like, it has, yes. They want, basically the algorithm wants you to do anything but what it is that you're trying to do.
Right.
Or I'm going to write, you know, the 15 responses that photographers get when sending out their portfolios, like, and it's, you know, some guy with a hat on, and then, you know what I mean? Like these yeah. kinds of nonsense. If that's what it takes now, let's say you say, well, the heck with that. I'm not making mini movies. I'm trying to be a photographer, or I'm not going to be a goofball just to get likes. Well, then how else in today's world do you get your stuff out there? You know,
this is a question that has come up a lot. Especially recently. It seems like I have a quite a few people that I've spoken with that are wrestling with this same thing of going, you know, my reach on social
yep.
is
topped out
2%, 1% of,
oh, I see, of the followers.
Yeah. And I don't have, you know, a lot of followers to begin with, maybe.
Sure.
And so 1% of those, and how many of those are just, you know,
yeah,
liking it because effectively it's saying, I saw this.
Exactly. And how many of those are actual, you know, it's like that, Jay Gold or somebody I had a quote, and it was, you know, I think I said it before on the show, you know, your social media followers are not your clients.
No.
Like the minute you get that through your head, then you're better off, you know?
Yeah.
I also find, and I was thinking about this today, you know, I have my work on my site as a big portfolio. It's not really about me. Yeah, there's an about thing with a paragraph and a half about me in a picture, but it's not about me as a person, right?
Mm-hmm,
Because
do you think that's hurting you?
Well, it's just interesting because that's the way it was done in the past. Like, I am an artist. I'm just going to stay back here and I'm going to let my work speak for itself. You know right. what I mean? Like there's that sort of humble sort of... puritanical, you know what I mean? Like a very mid-century Western art kind of way of doing it. But I am a fairly likable person who can you know, talk to people and do all the rest of it. So maybe I'm giving up some of my greatest benefit by not highlighting me on top of my work. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, there is the adage, people don't buy art, they buy the artist.
Exactly. Right.
And
right.
if the artist is invisible, for lack of a better word, or if the artist, you know, chooses to, and it's not that you're hiding behind the work, but
no.
if your visibility is masked by the work, then it loses a sense of personalness.
Sure.
You know,
but alternatively, if I go on my site and I make the first page of my site, instead of a bunch of my work, it's a, hey, I'm Bill. I'm here to take your picture, blah, 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 blah. You know, and like here, you can buy this package for $750 and whatever. Then some big client comes to me and they're like, well, we'd like to hire you for $750 to do this ad campaign for.
Well, BMW. I think you're going to extremes.
No, but you know, I think there is, I don't want to lay out prices because prices are very variable.
I don't think you have to, but you can say, hey, you know what? My name's Bill Wadman. I live in New York. Yeah. This is what lights me up. This is the kind of work that I love to do. And I'd love to do it with you. Hit me up.
Okay. Do you think that would work?
I don't know.
Jeffrey's like, it would work on me, baby.
Yeah. I don't know. And that's the point is none of us knows, mm-hmm. in quotes. None of us knows what's going to work.
Totally. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And the one thing that I have always loved about the web versus, say, something like print is the web is fluid. Okay.
Yes.
The web is ever changing and we know this. And the web is malleable in a way that's different. If you print out 500, you know, zines to send out that talk about, and then you realize, you know what? Shit, that's not really how I want to say that. Or, you know what? I should have included XYZ photo instead of ABC photo.
Sure.
You're stuck.
Sure.
But the web is unique in that you can try something and go, you know what? I'm going to AB this. I'm going to try this experience for the next 90 days on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you go back, or a month, or 2 weeks, or whatever it is.
Right. I guess it also, though, if you're, say you have a book and you have 30 pages in your book or something, you choose 30.
Yeah.
You can also tend to say, well, I can show 180 pictures on over here. It makes editing harder.
If I'm looking for a photographer,
sure.
I don't even know what title I would have, but if I'm looking for a photographer and it takes me 180 pictures to decide whether or not I like the work.
Sure.
I shouldn't have that job.
Right.
And if it takes you 180 pictures to convince me that you're good, you shouldn't have your job.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that there are 180 pictures to convince for somebody, but it could say that there are 180 pictures that you could also say, okay, I see 15 pictures that are amazing. What does 16 to 20 look like? Because a lot of people can have 15 pictures that are amazing, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
All of it is a big giant question mark, and it's almost impossible to do a cause and effect, you know, ad hoc, post hoc ergo propter hoc, you know, after therefore because of, you know, let's say tomorrow I change my website and have a big picture of me waving, you know, and like we were saying,
is that where we landed on this?
That's is either that or me falling through the sidewalk. I don't know.
But now that I'd pay to see. Come
hey, wait a minute.
What?
but you know, if I change that tomorrow and then next week somebody calls me and they're like, hey, we'd love you to come in and do this medium big project. You know, I could say, oh, it's because I changed my website to have this. Maybe I had nothing to do with that. Maybe the person looked at me 6 months ago. You know what I mean? And then I'm going to think.
In that situation, you could ask, sure. Hey, how did you find me?
Yeah.
You know, what made you pick me?
Yeah.
You know, and not from a sort of self-deprecating standpoint of just,
sure.
You know, I'm curious, you know, I've been doing some different things lately and I'd love to know what was it that, you know, had you sign on the line that is dotted.
Sure.
As they say.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's always a risk in going from being like other people, part of the pack. So you're knowable, right?
Right.
You know, like Jeffrey does this.
Yep.
Like other people who do what he does this, he does it at a high level. He is one of those dependable people to do the thing that I need done.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, oh, Jeffrey's the weirdo who has a totally different way of advertising this. Maybe that's an advantage and maybe it's a disadvantage and it's hard to tell sometimes. You know, I think you need to make a choice and live with that choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever that
and
means.
And I don't think you need to have people to go back to your point a minute ago about like, what if 16 through 20 aren't good?
Yep.
Ellen von Unworth came up in my feed the other day and she put up this set of pictures that I don't think are particularly interesting. I don't think they're, you know, if it didn't have her name on it, I wouldn't even scrolled through on the carousel to see what else was there.
Were they the wedding pictures that are up?
Yes.
There? Yeah. Okay, I'm looking at those now.
There's nothing special about them.
No.
You know, if you like, it would be if that you didn't know that skinny. Was the same photographer that did the work in Fraulein, you wouldn't put those two together. It doesn't compute in the same way.
Sure.
But I'm not going to base my opinion of her on that body of work.
Yeah, but is that just because you know who she is? If that was the first thing you saw of her and that's the only post you did and you didn't click over to look at more, you might not follow her if that was
correct.
The thing that popped up.
Correct. Correct.
You know, we're not all her. You know?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And that's kind of the point is if I saw that, I wouldn't go any further.
Yeah.
But it's only because I know this other thing. And I would imagine that's a thing that you have to fight with. Anybody who makes anything has to fight with it because you don't know where somebody is docking in to your body of work.
Sure.
So to your point about, you know, what if 16 through 20 are bad? That's an interesting question because what if 16 through 20 is where a particular client docked into your work and they go, yeah, that Wadman guy, that's not what we're looking for.
What if the picture I put up last week, which was, you know, black and white ones of Cisco that we talked about, right?
Yeah, right.
What if somebody says, well, it's another dance photographer. Next.
Next. Yeah, right.
And that's not what I normally shoot. I was trying to stretch and do something different. You know what I mean? To expand myself.
Yeah.
And it potentially backfired. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, I do. And so does it get to, does it get us to the, to a place where people are just looking for what they already want?
Well, yes. And if that's the case, then there's nothing you can do to suck them in. Either they see what they want to see or they don't and they move on.
Yeah.
So stop trying to make it fit. You know, it's these are these sort of round and round and circle things that really do make you crazy as somebody.
Yeah. And you don't have, well, I'm not even going to say you, very few people have the name. Let's say going back to Ellen von Unwerth, she's a name. If she puts up a photo that you don't like, in some cases, so what? Because there are 5,000 other photos of hers that you will like.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like to tie it into the AI thing. There's a discussion on Threads about, you know, Annie Leibovitz recently said that she doesn't care about AI. She's not worried about it. And, and my response to that was, well, of course you're not. You don't have to be.
Right.
Because your name is garnering as much attention as your work. People want you, they want the cachet of saying that Annie Leibovitz shot my portrait, my account, create, whatever it is.
And you're 75 years old.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, I mean, just to some extent, you're at the end of your career.
Yeah, maybe. But even if she was 20 years old, it's like you have this name that transcends the work that you're producing in some cases, that people are looking for that name.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it becomes harder for, you know, you are, let's see, I was going to say you're like the Paul Giamatti of photographers. You're a good working photographer. You're doing the jobs. You're showing up.
Yep.
But even Paul Giamatti is now getting beyond Paul Giamatti kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Sure. But, you know, it took 40 years.
Sure. But for that sort of journeyman, tradesman, creative, who's just trying to do great work and just trying to get out in front of, you know, the next job, it's hard.
That's where AI really does beat. That's the level that AI beats down almost as much as anybody.
It's not going to be at the extreme high end yet.
Yes.
It's going to be that journeyman, tradesman level creative who's working job to job, getting hired by, like yourself, getting hired by magazines, getting hired by brands.
Although on that video that I sent you, that AI versus artist thing, there are a lot of like, it's not my world because there were a lot of illustrators in that specifically.
Yes.
But they seemed like people who are big working illustrators, you know,
in that space. Yes.
Yeah. Who have a thing. And they were just like, this is ridiculous. Here's mine. And here's 12 other ones that this thing made in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It takes me 2 days to do this. Like, I don't understand. How am I supposed to?
How do I compete?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right? And
there's so few people who need illustration like that anyway. That's even such a niche in today's world. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. It's all right. One of the things that I touched on in the piece was that it's not just the work itself. It's the potential ramifications of reputational damage that could come along with it. Like this artist could say, "Well, I would never do something like that." Or work for that person, but to the average bear, that's your work because they haven't gone any deeper.
It's a thing in the style of you, but it's a bunch of Nazis, you know, or whatever.
Whatever it is, And now you go, well, wait a minute. Now what? You know, you can't copyright a style, so now there's this other level of thing that I don't. Not only do I have to worry about you stealing my work, now I have to worry about where you're going to use that stolen work. You know. So it's very, it's complex, and it's something that I think, you know, as I said in the thing, I think it has to be a conversation. I think there has to be, because the, you know, AI is not going to go away. We know that. Artists aren't going to go away. We know that. So how and where do those two,
I don't think artists are going away.
Or intersect?
I do think that perhaps the large class of professional artists may go away.
Well, okay. I don't remember how many years ago it was that IKEA started using CG renders of their furniture in their catalogs.
Okay. Yep.
Now that work was still at that point created by people. There were still CG artists that were making it, but it wasn't real. And I've got my air quotes again. Yep. It wasn't real furniture that you were looking at.
Yeah.
But because people were making it, I guess that was okay. It was perceived as okay.
Or that was just step one of a continuum of 300.
Yeah. And now we're at sort of, you know,
215.
The next phase of that or the next several phases down the road where, okay, you're comfortable with that. Now we're going to take the people out of the mix and just have AI generate this whole new product line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where it gets really scary. And I was listening to someone the other day and they said that, you know, in the short term, AI isn't going to take your job. The person who knows how to use AI better than you, that's who's going to take your job. That's near term.
Yeah, but I think that's going to last not very long.
Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not.
That's like the, you know, don't need to be a photographer. Learn how to become a prompt engineer. It's like, well, that's going to go away real quick, I think.
Probably. You know, I see the thing with, and I'm not deep enough into this world to know whether I'm just talking shit, but what I have seen so far is that you don't have a lot of control over small iterative changes.
Yes,
you know, if you're on set with somebody, you can go, you know what, turn your head just slightly. You can do that thing with your hand where you go, you know what, just a little bit more. Let me get that. Boom. And you can do that. Or you can go up and you know, flip the brim of a hat or tousle the hair a little bit more. All of those little iterative changes that you can make a pretty strong argument is what makes some of this work unique, or a little brush stroke here that didn't exist. Sure.
I just wonder the people who are paying for that, how much they really care about it.
Well,
or if those are the things that we as artists fetishize.
Yes. And is that part of the problem, that good enough has become good enough?
Yes, probably. Yes. But you know, isn't that's always been the truth.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why, you know, somebody hires their nephew with a 5D instead of me, you know?
So maybe you should go get a 5D and be somebody's nephew.
I had one and then, my friend broke it. It's all right. I'll get it.
Fascinating.
And
I've been getting some really interesting comments on the back of this piece. And that's kind of what I wanted. I want to hear from both sides. I want to hear people that go, nope, I am never touching AI. It is of the devil. It is no good can come of this. And I want to get the other people who go, yeah, I love it. And I want to get all the people in between, because I think AI is going to be this fundamental shift. Virtually every industry is going to be affected somehow.
Sure. I think though, in the end, it'll be less exposed to humans. And I think it'll be like a layer in the middle that we don't directly interact with, but it does things in between. Does that make sense?
Like a middleware type thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then who's at either end? Are there people at either end in this scenario?
Yeah, probably. But it's funny. It's like somebody says, you know, okay, I can use AI to, Jeffrey, I'd like to buy your Fuji 35 f1.4 from you, whatever. Right.
Well, how about for me? Okay. That'd be even better.
Okay. I'd like to buy it for you. Now, I could just say that. Or I could put it into a AI thing to help me write it. And it would be like, dear sir, you know,
I hope this finds you well
exactly.
and happy.
Concerning your request for a faster lens, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And then it gets ballooned into this big fluffy thing. And then on the other end, you have another AI, which takes that and distills it back down to, hey, Jeffrey, I want to buy you a 35 1.4.
Right.
So I wonder if it ends up canceling itself out in a lot of ways, you know? I don't know. I think it's going to be a tool. I think it's going to be a mechanism. I think it's going to be all those things. I just know in the time that I spent using it and the more I read about it, I don't feel good using it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I feel icky afterwards. Well, even if I get good results.
I think the goals are different, right? It seems to be. And again, I'm not part of this world. I've only dipped my toes in, but it seems to be very results driven versus experience driven or process driven.
Oh, I see what you're doing there.
Zing.
Well, you know, as somebody said to me, saw somebody say the other day, let yourself be an executioner, not a magician.
Hmm.
Like, do it. Yeah. Don't try to, like, just.
Oh, like execute. Oh, okay. I was thinking like cat, you know, the guy with the hatchet and the hood. I'm like, be an executioner.
No, like, yeah, like you're executing, like, yeah, execute. Yeah, no,
I got that. I was like, who are we executing in this scenario?
You, sir.
You.
There it is. But you know, it's the sort of just keep doing the, you can't make the magic come. The magic comes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay. You know, stop trying to think that you can make magic every single time.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, you see so much work that is so beautiful. There's some photographer put up a photo shoot he did with Rebecca Ferguson.
Rebecca Ferguson from the Dune and the Mission Impossible. Hey, is she coming back for the next?
She can come back anytime she wants.
Wow.
Love that woman.
Wow. There it is.
I just think she's beautiful. Anyway.
So is she coming back? Do we know?
For the next Dune?
No, the next Tom Cruise Mission Impossible.
No. Did you see part one of seven?
Yes, but you know, these things have a way of, wasn't really happening.
I wonder if, good question. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Silo, by the way, terrific show.
Conrad watched that one. A little too post-apocalyptic for me.
I really enjoyed it.
But anyway, these pictures of her were largely great, right? They were.
Send me a link. Send me a link, please.
They were good. And, sorry, I'm searching for it right now. I think I've saved it. Yeah. Okay. You know, and the photographer, you know, not every single one of the pictures was amazing, but there were a few of them, more than a few of them, that were really nice and interesting enough that it made me go, oh man, I think somebody needs to take more, like that one really works. This one doesn't work. But then it also made me think, well, you know, he's also shooting Rebecca Ferguson. So I'm sure, you know, I mean, that doesn't hurt. Cause that never hurts.
But is it really as simple? I mean, we've joked about this for years. Is it really as simple, or can it be really as simple as pretty light, pretty subject, pretty photo?
I think oftentimes, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Hmm.
You know, a subject that's willing to have fun and mess around and, like, you know, she just looks really cool in these pictures. And then there's actually this one like double exposure shot, like five or six in, that is kind of fun and cool. And I'm just like,
let me see. I don't like the cover shot. Oh, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I'm not blown away by that one. Although
it's
I do
a little too.
I do like the flatness of the light, just because it's not something I ever do. So it's kind of
a little too Terry Richardson.
Yes. Funny. Yeah. But if you go like five or six in, there's this double exposure of her, with like orange on one side, blue on the other.
Oh yeah, that's interesting.
That's kind of cool. See, and I'm just looking at it, I'm just like, see, that's fun. That's the kind of fun stuff I should do. Friend of the show, Cody Rasmussen, who we used as a photographer of the week a few weeks ago. I had lunch with him the other day, and he sent me some pictures he took recently. And I was like, how did you get that look? And he like took prints and froze them and reshot them and like froze them in water and like did all this crazy stuff. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like I would never even think to do that. That's a good idea. You know what I mean? Like maybe I should start doing crazier stuff than that. By the way, also a little aside, I got my hands on a couple X2D files from Hasselblad.
Oh, okay. That's the newest one, right? Or no, wait. The newest one is
the new one.
The 500 cm thing.
Yeah. This is the one that's like the little rangefinder-y one. With
right. Okay.
But the 100
aluminum body, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the files look very much like my Fuji because it's the same sensor, but they are Hasselblad files that don't open in Capture One.
Oh, they only open in focus.
Or do they?
Uh-oh. Dun, dun, dun.
Because this guy here with two thumbs converted it to a DNG, swapped the metadata like I did for my Pentax for years.
Oh, right.
And they opened right up.
Wow. So do they look good?
Yeah, they look great. And not only that, but they showed up as face. Okay. I told it because I just used the same script as my old thing, because I was just trying to change the make, not the model. So it changed it to a phase one IQ250 file. But when you open them up in Capture One, it did not see it as a phase one IQ250 file, which is a 50 megapixel sensor. It saw it as a 100 megapixel phase one file.
Wait, so what is the actual camera? Is it 100 megapixels?
Or it's 100 megapixels.
It is 100. Okay.
Yeah, but it saw it as a different model than I told the file it was. Like Capture One ignored the file thing, you know, the model of the camera, and came up with its own model of the camera that was closer to the actual files, which is just interesting from a like, huh, is that how that works?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So anyway, just, it was, kind of neat, and, yeah, the files look great, and, you know, but anyway, the point is that you could theoretically open, those Hasselblad files in Capture One. If you are so inclined and you are listening to this, let me know and I'll teach you how to do it.
Somebody, Ben Thomas. I think Ben uses that.
Yeah. Didn't they give him one of those things?
Well, they gave him the first one because he was
one of their
chosen
people.
As one of the Hasselblad masters.
Yeah.
And I love his work. But I don't know if he's using the second one or not.
Anyway, but yeah. So anyway, it totally worked. But anyway, the idea is that like, there are all kinds of things we could do to our work, like this guy's doing. I mean, the double exposure stuff, that I'm like, man, I just have to just try weird stuff, because sometimes weird stuff ends up doing neat, coming out neat, you know?
Well, and even if it doesn't, though, it may, the failure, quotes again, the failure may take you in a different direction.
Yes.
It does get you where you want to go.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, as my friend told me, a friend told him, if you do something and put it through a process and then put it through another process, it comes out as art.
Hold on. Let me write this down.
process, then
a second.
Yeah.
And piece, carry the two.
Yeah. It comes out as art. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe sometimes it's just that simple.
Hmm.
You know, like take whatever it is you think is finished and do something else to it. Maybe this is a little experiment for everyone listening. This week, do what it is that you do. And then when you're done with it, do something that you normally wouldn't do with it and take it in a completely different direction. You know what I mean? If it's a photograph, print it out and do something with the print, you know, to affect the print somehow.
I remember, okay, you were talking about ice for a second. Years ago, Chris Matheson did this thing where he did something similar where he printed out photographs and he placed them in, like he froze an inch thick or something layer of water into ice, placed the photograph there, and then did another inch of water on top. So the photograph was encased in ice, and then he threw that resulting piece off the balcony and it shattered. And then he photographed that scene. And that was the final work. And they were fascinating. They were really, really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit like
Cody.
Well, yes, like Cody, but I was going to say in the same way that who's the guy we like, Brazilian photographer guy who.
Vic Muniz.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. You know, where it's the photograph at the end, not the thing that he made with stuff in the real world that is the art.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, is that gets us, is art the process? Is art the result? Is art just the doing? Is it the witness? Like,
I think for the,
and I think
for,
you can dock in all sorts of places.
Sure. But I think for the maker, the art is the process.
Yeah.
But for the viewer, the art is the result of that process. I just think that maybe we all get stuck in the process that we normally use.
Mm-hmm.
And that we, not even like solidify, but we just get stuck like mud. Like it starts drying up, right? Where it's like we trod where we trod, and that becomes like flattened down. And we think like, okay, finally I have my space, but how did we get to the place we trotted down? We were just messing around and trying weird things. And I think as we get older and more stuck in our ways, we don't try the new things. We don't play. as
well. And you've talked about that, and sure. We both have talked about that of going, look, I have this body of work, this thing that I do, in this style that I do, in this you know, collection of things that I want to be known for. Is it, and I'm asking this of myself as well, is it fear?
Sure.
That keeps us from going, you know what, I'm going to flip my lens around, or I'm going to put a piece of tinfoil in front, like whatever sure. It is. I don't know.
Yes. I mean, not so much fear. I think it might be not short-sightedness, but myopia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that, which is that, that, for example, if I say, oh, I'm going to try something new. So I take a bunch of pictures with Cisco and I start merging them together in Photoshop. Sure. Yeah. The results are fine. But here's the thing. I didn't actually do anything new. I took pictures and then I mastered them in Photoshop. That's what I do all the time. Like, what I need to do is something that doesn't involve Photoshop.
So it's the new on the like initial creating end.
Yeah.
Not once you have the thing and then manipulate it afterwards.
Or new kind of manipulation. I take the pictures of Cisco and I cut them out and I do it by hand with scissors. And that's the new thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As opposed to doing it in Photoshop. Or I remember there's a line somewhere in the Zen and the Art of Mastering Maintenance. I'll see if I can find it. Where he talks about it's not the thing that you thought was coming. It's the fact that you wake up and realize it was all a dream. Like, that's the big change. Like, it's got to be a completely like perpendicular, like, it's not the thing that you least thought likely. It's a whole other level that you went out. You know what I'm saying? Am I making any sense? Like,
I think so.
It's not the arrow that you thought was, you know, that you thought was going to hit you in the back of the head because you weren't looking that way. It was the fact that the whole thing was a video game and you weren't even in, there was no arrow to begin with. Like, that's the big change. Like, the change has to be something outside of your realm of imagination. It's like there's a scene in From the Earth to the Moon where they're talking to Frank Borman in front of Congress and they're like, why didn't we see that the Apollo 1 astronauts could die on the pad? And he was just like, it was a failure of imagination. We never thought, like, no one ever thought that this could happen. Right. It's not that we knew it could happen and we didn't do anything about it. We just, it didn't, never came up. You know,
there are only so many variables you can consider.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there are still variables beyond those that you can consider.
But maybe sometimes you need to put the variables you normally consider aside and just pick a whole other set of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe it's the variables that are holding you back.
Mm.
You know? It's not a bad title.
Yeah, I like that one. I wrote down a big fluffy thing. But
did you say that or I say that?
You said that.
I did?
A big fluffy thing. And I was like, oh, that's cute. We take notes. That's what we
you know,
do.
It's kind of, this actually links into that. So there's an interview with the 1975 that I found a couple weeks ago.
Maddie, the lead guy there.
And you know, like, did you watch there? They did a live thing on Amazon, I think it was, or I think it was Amazon. Anyway, they had a live show that they filmed. And
is this the thing where the sets keep changing?
Yeah, they're like in rooms.
Yeah.
It was really
interesting
good.
Concept. Yeah, really interesting concept.
Oh yeah, because people would come in and like turn a light on and pick up their guitar and start playing in the little room they're in, and then if they turn the light off and they like walk away, and you're like, wait, what? I just thought it was really neat, and I like their music a lot. I think it has a very specific sound to it that it's interesting to me. Anyway, they're talking to Maddie and I think their producer or engineer guy. And we're talking about how, and the guy who was interviewing them said something about like, oh, you know, what plugins do you use? And Maddie was all like, you know, smoking a cigarette or shooting up heroin or something and being very upset about it. He's like, oh, he's just like, oh, I hate plugins. We hate plugins. We don't do plugins.
Like audio plugins?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, and I think it was the idea being, you know, that... This is like the cycle that happens all the time, right? The tools that one generation find liberating, the next find constricting.
Hmm.
You know, And so the idea that 15 years ago, you're just like, man, I could have every synthesizer and every, you know, little sound module or effects box in the world all inside my laptop, and I can use them as much as I want. And then the next people go, oh God, can you just get that away from me and give me like one weird compressor from the 70s? And yeah.
Give me a Juno 106 and exactly. Let me just do my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that they are that way. And one of the things they said was that they started using processes that involved like creating noise and stuff in the recording process that they couldn't remove.
Mm.
So that randomness, that things would break up in a way that they didn't, you know, cut off his voice right here in this vocal line. They used some sort of thing, or they just jammed it left and right, you know, on and off, like as he sang. And that was the thing. And that sort of randomness and the novelty of something different was itself liberating. And I don't know, I just thought it was interesting that it's come all the way around that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember years ago, an interview with Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd talking about how they were getting different sounds. And now this was on the, you know, the very beginning sort of the synth era, but they were plugging outputs into inputs and inputs into outputs and,
sure.
You know, cross wiring things and just letting things sort of happen because there was no rule book or there was no sort of manual to go along with it. And all that stuff got, to your point too, it got baked in. And yep. That's what you end up with.
Yeah. 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 And it ends up, it's freeing to not have as much control sometimes. And I think that's maybe what people like about Lomo cameras and things with light leaks and bad plastic lenses and film that's, you know, unpredictable and whatever it is that we have, you know, I could take out my Fuji or my Pentax and I have perfect control over everything that those machines do. It's like, well, sometimes I want something that's a little quirky, you know?
Right.
I want.
How do you turn off those plugins, quote unquote,
yep.
That you have come to rely on?
I don't know, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think that, easy to say, hard to do, right? But I don't know. Do you think that there's a trick?
If there is, I haven't found it yet.
I mean, I think that maybe working in a domain that is not your normal domain can help, right? Because in the sense that if you don't have any prior patterns, you know, for example, if I print out a picture and I paint over it, I can't paint. I've never been able to paint.
Right.
So, you know, maybe I need to like do something that I don't know how to do and not do it well, but maybe mixing something I don't do well with something I do well per our earlier thing, process and it's art.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe I don't need to do that other thing well, you know?
Well, I mean, look, years ago, Brooke Shaden did something similar where she started applying paint physically, literally, you know, applying paint to her photos trying to, and she's not a painter. And some of the experiments worked well, some didn't.
Yep.
But I think it helped to free her up and allow her to go in some different directions that maybe she wouldn't have gone in had she not experimented and tried something that she wasn't comfortable with.
I think the biggest fear in that is that you're wasting time doing something you're not good at when you could be getting better at the thing you are good at.
100%. 100%. How many times have each of us in this life or the last, you know, didn't pursue a project because, well, that's not going to land anywhere.
Sure.
That's not going to get me anything.
You and I have done it 16 times this week.
That's true.
15 of them were yours, of course, but...
Zing.
By the way, I found that exact quote, if you don't mind me reading it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see. That's a word he later used to describe a growth of knowledge that doesn't move forward like an arrow in flight, but expands sideways, like an arrow enlarging in flight or like the archer discovering that although he has hit the bullseye and won the prize, his head is on a pillow and the sun is coming through the window. Lateral knowledge is knowledge that is that's from a wholly unexpected direction, from a direction that's not even understood as a direction until the knowledge forces itself upon one. Lateral truth points to the falseness of axioms and postulates underlying one's existence system of getting to the truth. So it's like, I'm going to give you a piece of information that sort of removes one of the legs that you're standing on, you know? And I think that a lot of I think we all build these very stable stools for the things that we do and, you know, end up pigeonholing ourselves.
Right.
And I, you know, if anybody hasn't read Sending You to Motorcycle Maintenance, it's a great book. You should pick it up and read it because it's a classic. Yeah, I don't know. Was there something else on the list that we were supposed to talk about this week?
I don't remember, but there is an Audible. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It just popped in and
sure.
And a ship apparently lost power. A cargo ship lost power last night and
hit a bridge.
Hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, and the entire bridge collapsed.
Yes.
And they are still looking for people in the water and using sonar to find cars that went over. And it's, man.
Do we have any idea how many people were on the bridge?
I don't have that. Let's see. One of the things that came through, the bridge has been there for 47 years.
It's around not that old.
Around 31,000 people cross the bridge each day. Port of Baltimore is the ninth busiest in the U.S., moves $26 billion in international freight a year. So yes, I mean, human cost, yes, but there's also going to be a massive infrastructure hit until this thing gets.
Yeah, well, luckily it is in the outer loop of the thing and not on the main I-95 corridor, which, you know, it's a 695 like loop outside of Baltimore.
Right.
Not saying I'm just saying that at least it's not like stopping 95 from moving, which would be, you know, even a bigger problem. But yeah. No, I mean, it's, I saw this earlier. I just didn't know how many, it happened. Did they say what time this happened? And it didn't fall instantly, I don't think. It's like the thing hit and then eventually it fell, seemingly.
Yeah, it hit, the ship hit one of the pilings.
Okay, here we go.
It was looks at like
one
straight on.
1:28 in the morning. The main span of the bridge collapsed after Singapore-registered shipping container Dali lost power and collided with one of the support pillars. An unknown number of vehicles and construction workers were on the bridge at the time. The collapse was declared a mass casualty incident. Sonar explanation detected several vehicles underwater. Two people had been pulled out of the river, while at least seven are still missing. So, yeah, it's a real tragedy. It's crazy. I mean, that's not that far from you.
No, it's like 45 minutes. I've been across that bridge. And we were talking about it this morning. This is one of the, I don't like bridges.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis, you know, who's a pretty well-known guy.
I don't know who that is. I'm sorry.
He was on This Week in Google. He was a professor of journalism at CUNY, City University of New York. Was originally started, I think, Entertainment Weekly magazine and was the editor of People for years. Like, he was like one of those guys. Anyway, he famously is like terrified of bridges. He won't go over them. And then at one point, because he's on This Week in Google and they wanted him to go up to Petaluma to be on Twit, to be on it. And somebody had to drive him and he had to have like blindfold on when they went over the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he put it up this morning, like basically saying,
see,
you know, well, it was just like, oh, how quickly, you know, lives can change. But all I could think was, all you're thinking, Jeff, is like, oh my God, see, this is why I don't go on bridges, which right. Of course is, you know, a completely irrational way of really looking at it because a bridge collapses once every 10 years in America at this level. You know what I mean? Like in literally hundreds of millions of people go over these bridges every day. So it's, you know, but yeah, no, it's a terrible tragedy. Hopefully they can find anybody who's still left. Well, that's a big bridge, man. That's tall.
Yeah.
If you were in a car and it went over that.
So cold too. Yeah. Even if you survive the impact, not long in that frozen water would be.
Yeah. You know. Thanks for the real upper there, Jeffrey.
Sorry. I guess, in retrospect. Way to end on a high note, dude.
Are you feeling all right? You doing okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a bummer.
How's the change? I got a little something. My brother-in-law is from Kentucky, Northern Kentucky. And that's right by Cincinnati, Ohio. And okay. In Cincinnati, Ohio, there's a thing called Cincinnati chili. Do you know about Cincinnati chili?
No.
Okay. So there, it's a local, I guess, weird delicacy of some kind. Cincinnati chili is a Mediterranean spiced meat sauce used as a topping for spaghetti or hot dogs. So they put this stuff on top of spaghetti, and then they put beans and onions, cooked onions, and a pile of cheese on top of that. Now, I can hear by your silence that this does not sound delicious to you.
No. And I'm wondering where you're going with it.
Okay. So my brother-in-law has always talked about this. Cincinnati chili. So I said, come on, there's got to be a place in New York City that makes Cincinnati chili so I can go try this thing that he's talked about so much, right? So I found a place that makes Cincinnati chili one day a month on the final Monday of every month. So last night, my young friend Leela and I went and tried Cincinnati chili.
And?
It was weird. Yeah. It had a lot of cinnamon and cumin in it.
Yeah, not
cinnamon, nutmeg, allspice, clove, cumin, chili powder, and bay leaf.
Not for me.
And some recipes have unsweetened dark chocolate. And you put it over spaghetti and you eat it.
Yeah, not for me.
Anyway, I just want to say to anybody out in Cincinnati or the Ohio area or the Kentucky area who eats Cincinnati chili, I've tried it. It's not for me.
There you go.
That's, you know, little something. But I gave it my best shot.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's, you're braver than I.
I have a photographer of the week.
Do you?
Yes.
Oh, wait, you know, because I usurped yours last week, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
That. Sorry.
But it's actually okay because I ended up seeing a show of this guy's work.
Is it Richard Avedon?
He's a newcomer. His name is Richard Avedon. Bastian Wold, which I don't think we've used him before.
Yeah.
You know him.
I learned, hold on, let me see if it's the right person. Let me see. Yes, I learned about him from Ted Forbes years ago.
Okay.
When Ted was doing stuff about photography.
So, ooh, snap.
What?
Kidding.
Come on. We were all thinking it. Come on now.
He had an exhibition at the Phillips auction gallery.
Is that in New York?
Yeah. Which I had never been to, but I saw, I think he put it up in his Instagram that he had these prints up in New York. And so after I went to the dentist last week and found out that I have a cavity I have to have filled on Friday.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's easy though. The dental technology is so much better.
I know, but
you
just
won't even feel it.
I had a lot of cavities as a kid. Like I just have bad teeth. Like I brush and I floss and I water floss and I do everything and it doesn't seem to matter. I just have bad teeth. Anyway, I said, you know what? I'm going to go over and check out these pictures because I'm not that far away from this. So I went over and went into this like doorway to an elevator to the second floor. And I go in and there's just the security guard standing there. And there are these, I don't know, 60 by 40 foot prints on the walls maybe a dozen and a half, maybe something like that, like 15, 18 works on the wall. And they were really beautiful.
Wow.
And it's interesting for those of you who haven't seen this guy's work, black and white, a lot of shapes. Mm-hmm. He tends to shoot, you know, very pale white women on black or white and very dark black women on white. You know what I mean? So like things are really contrasty and he bumps them up and he puts like big hats and things on them. And his work is really, really beautiful. I think it's lovely.
Too.
Although, you know, it's funny. He put up some of his stuff and Jerry Saltz, you know, that guy, the art critic?
Art critic, yeah.
Was just like, derivative. Like was really dismissive about it. And I was like, you know what? It's really nice. Maybe there are people who have done similar work to this or done the exact same work, but this stuff is really good and really well done.
You know, and even if it is.
Yeah.
So what?
So he's making something. You're not.
So what? if it lands with people.
Yeah.
Like, so what?
Yeah.
So what? I'm
sick of critic stuff talking.
Well, it's not the end all be all.
Yes. I tend to agree. Interesting. So there's one of these in here. If you go into this set and you go, I don't know. Well, here, I can send you this picture. I'm on his website. I'm looking through the work section.
Got it.
You know, if you click on that, do you have a woman you can sit in silhouette where her skin's darkened, sort of?
Similar to the Kate Moss.
Okay. Yes.
Now, Albert Watson.
Go one photo back.
One photo back. Oh, wow.
And
interesting.
Yes. Right. So it's similar, except I think he just left the red in, where in the other one he pulled the red out.
Interesting. Huh.
Does he see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
And he
has
this weird thing where he's able to do this really ethereal look to the stuff in his backgrounds while they exist. It's not like it's just sitting on nothingness. It's also often, I wonder if that, it feels like sometimes the texture is added in post.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you look at the background texture on a lot of these pictures and it's like broken up. It's papery. It's got like a thing to it, but it feels like it's almost like something you could, I mean, I have done this myself, added something. It'd be interesting to see his process, I guess is what I'm saying.
Wait a minute. This is not the same person.
You think it's two different people? You think it's somebody with light skin and somebody with dark skin?
I think it is.
I don't think it is. I think it's the same person. I think it's the same person, just editing the file differently.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to try it later. I'm going to do something like this just to, you know, mix it up.
Yeah, why not? Interesting.
Anyway, I think his work is lovely. I think he does some really neat stuff. And he's young. He's like 38 years old.
Yeah.
So he makes us feel like a bunch of fools.
Well, I don't think that's the case, but he's certainly talented.
And he's got a podcast. Studio Wolt. Oh, where he interviews people. Apparently he shoots with a phase one camera. Do you shoot with a phase one camera, Jeffrey?
No. No, I don't.
Fool.
Well, that's why your work's no good.
Oh, my God.
There you go. There you go. You know what? Let's gear up. Let's end on a geary thing.
Okay, let's gear it up.
And not Frank.
I see where you're going there.
Yeah.
I couldn't follow it because it was very confusing and lots of weird curved lines, but.
Money, no object. And it's for joy, for pleasure, not for client work or sure. I'm going to. What's your desert island camera?
It's funny because, I mean, other than me spending, you know, $50,000 on some giant phase back system, I kind of have the best cameras that I would get. You know what I mean? Like I kind of have them. And the one I like more is the one that's 10 years old, which is odd. I guess what I'm saying is that I could probably buy my desert island camera and I don't know what it is. It might be the newer Fuji is way better than the one that I have. That's a really nice camera.
A fun camera for you. That's fun. Really? That's the camera that would just inspire you to go out and shoot for fun.
The one that inspires me to go out to shoot for fun is the one that I already have, the Pentax. I mean, I still like picking it up. I really do. And they're like, I don't know what else would be better than that.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the problem that I have is that, you know, Conrad will say, well, just go get the other thing or whatever it is, you know, and I'll be like, well, what? Go get what? And will that actually make me happy? No. I have something that makes me happy. I spent $10,000 or $12,000 trying to get something that would make me happier and it made me less happy. So maybe, you know, I am not limited by my gear in any way, really, you know?
Yeah. And that wasn't the point of the question. It was even removing
okay.
the quality okay. of the output, just the camera that
a Pentax 6.7 maybe.
Yeah.
A Mamiya 7.
Yeah.
If somebody was paying for my film usage, a Mamiya 7. That would be fun. Because it's still relatively small, but you can get a big ass negative out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And those actually aren't that bad, I don't think, to buy. They're, you know, $4,000 or something like that.
Right.
It's not like you're spending 20 grand in it. Yeah, let's see how much a Mamiya 7.2 is. What's your guess? You got a guess?
I'm going to say $7,000.
And what do you think is $3,500 to $9,000? Here's one for $3,500. What would be your desert island camera?
I've never used one, but I think one of the cameras that I'm most fascinated by and think would be really interesting is the Hasselblad X-Pan, wide format.
Sure.
That feels like it's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my 500CM is like the most, that's the one that brings me the most like overall joy using it. It just like, you know. It's not always the most usable camera for certain things, you know, because it's manual focus and you got to, you know, it's slow to, you know, you're working slowly with it. But it's the one that most makes you feel like you're using a camera. Mm. I wonder if kids going forward, because you and I still have the weird, you know, fetishization of sounds.
Oh yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder if we will someday, the kids will just, they won't care about the fact that something is making, you know, these kind of weird sounds, you know, and for them, it'll all be about, they're like, well, we don't need to see it through a viewfinder. We just want to, you know, like that won't mean anything to them.
Wait, what is that?
That's the Pentax.
Here, wait, hold on. Hold on here.
What is that?
F2.
Okay. Well, hold on a second. Hold on.
I love this camera. I really do.
Coming back.
Haven't used it in forever, but I still love it.
All right, here we go.
Oh, wait. Was that the CM? Was that the little thing flipping up? Yeah, that's good.
See, that's a pretty good sound.
Yeah.
And it's very satisfying because you're right. The thing flipping up is a thing.
Yeah. That's once you hear that sound, it's one of those things you can't unhear it.
Yeah. I'd pull out my M4 and do it, but you wouldn't hear anything. So
yeah.
Ooh, snap.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go snip.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly, I'm fortunate enough to sort of have all my dream cameras, you know?
Yeah.
I had an RZ67 once. You could kill a man with that camera.
Yeah, you could frame a house. Yeah, those are beasts.
I mean, that was a big camera. I wish I had kept it because I sold it for, it was sort of at the bottom of the trough of the film camera era, you know, where everyone was just getting rid of all that stuff because they didn't want it, but then it all came back. So it's probably worth three times what I sold it
for. Let's see, what an X-Pan. What do you guess? What an X-Pan?
Do they just have one lens or is it removable?
It's removable.
I would say $1,800 for the body.
Oh, a few years ago, you could have done that. But now, Hasselblad X-Pan with a 45mm f4,
$4,300.
And here's one with near mint condition, $6,500.
Let's see what an RZ67 is now. The body is not that bad, actually.
Yeah. Here's an X-Pan 2 with a 45mm f4, shutter count of 27, $8,800. See, and this is what interests me about, and I know we're getting a little long on time, but this is what interests me about the 50R, is I love the idea, and you can do this with your cameras as well. I love the idea of being able to shoot 16:9, 1:1, 4:3. I kind of love that.
Would you actually do it in camera?
If I could, if I had a 50R to mess around with, yes, I would love the challenge of shooting on JPEG and shooting in 16 by 9 and you get what you get. That's it.
Well, you could buy any of the modern mirrorless cameras can do all those things too.
Yeah, but you've got more pixels to work with, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, an R5 is still 47.
Is it?
Yeah, megapixels or whatever it is. So you still got, you know, 43, 42. You still got, you know, you'd still come out with a 30 something megapixel image. You know?
Yeah.
I guess, and you know, to one last thing about Bastian Wolt, like, I don't know how big those files are. Let's say he's shooting with a 100 megapixel camera. They were big things, but they had a lot of grain added to them. So you almost couldn't tell. You know what I mean? Like
you couldn't tell that he had that much.
He was throwing he was sacrificing resolution for look, for tone. You know what I mean? And I think maybe that is the ultimate show of power, is that you can, you know, burn some of your money in order to get what you want, you know, to some extent. Like I can burn resolution because what I want is, it's, I need that resolution so that I can pull it back to where I want it to be, you know? And there's a lot of people who add a lot of grain to their images, which is a conversation we could have another time, but that's, you know, the more I talk to people, the more I hear people are like adding a lot more grain than I would ever add to their images. So anyway, it's a thing. Bastian Wolt, great,
good one.
Great work.
Yeah, really good one.
And yes, this week is Easter in America. So
it is.
Wait, is it next week? Yeah. Yeah. It's this weekend.
Sunday.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good Friday is on Friday.
Oh, one quick thing. Last Thursday, I'm at a birthday party for a friend. And across the room, I see this guy. And I'm talking to this woman who
was
I just
Ryan
met.
Was it Ryan Gosling? Please tell me it was Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
I'm talking to this woman I just met. And I'm like, I look over and I see this guy. I'm like, God, that guy looks so familiar.
Was it Ryan Reynolds? Was it one of the Ryans?
No. And I said, he looks so familiar. Excuse me, I have to go find out if I know this guy. So I walk up to him and I said, excuse me, you look so familiar. What's your name? And he says, Alex. And I said, I took your picture in 2007.
Oh, right. Yeah. You posted. Yeah. I saw that.
And we sat there and we chatted for a half an hour. And what I didn't know at the time was that this guy was a pretty high-end photo retoucher. And so we're meeting up next week. But just goes to show you, 17 years later, you can still bump into people that you met.
Yeah.
And spend an hour with 17 years ago. All right. Cool. If anybody needs to get a hold of us, podcast@ontakingpictures.com. If you're Alan Bailward, you can write to podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
Wow. You know, he's going to drive all the way over to get you. He's going to get on the Canadian
pipeline.
I don't know.
He's going to go in the pipeline like a flume.
Like a flume.
Alan, I hope you do come have lunch with me. Love you, sir. If you leave us a voicemail, 929-390-1916, and at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris on the Instagram and the threads.
Speaking of coming to visit you, honestly, yes. There is an Alexei Brodovich, and you know what a fiend I am for Alexei Brodovich. There's an Alexei Brodovich show at where is it? It's at some museum in New York. Is it New York or is it Philly? Oh, you know
it's
what?
The Barnes Foundation.
That's the one.
Until Barnes May Foundation. 19th.
That's Philly though, isn't it?
Yeah, we can meet in Philly theoretically. I can get a cheap train to Philly.
Yeah. I very much want to see that show. I want to see that show.
Okay.
I was going to reach out and see if maybe, you know, we could talk to somebody and like record that and, you know.
Well, reach out and then find it. Either way, let's find a day. I can, as long as it's a couple weeks out, I can get a cheap ticket
on the train. Okay. I will reach out to them.
Okay.
I'll put that on my list. Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we will talk to you next week after Jeffrey and I make our plans. And
by the way, this was episode 366. How much?
366.
366.
Not 666.
Wouldn't that be wild?
It's going to be a while for that.
Yeah.
Episode 366 of On Taking Pictures.
Right. That's the one.
We put it at the end.
Right. So people, if people are sitting here still going, what the hell have I been listening to? Then now you know. Now you know.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See you.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you want to say. Trying to make